Chapter 4. Still caught on the edge of a dream, Dirk grew aware of his body in tiny increments. His cheek was pressed against impossible softness, the urge to rub against it overwhelming. One of his arms dangled into nothingness, while the other lay trapped beneath him, pins and needles throbbing in his hand. Someone was touching his shoulder. The last part seemed important, so Dirk focused on the sensation, still too close to slumber to fully register the fingers prodding gently at his arm. It came to him all at once. The common room. Riggins. Dirk bolted upright, apology on the tip of his tongue. Too late, he registered the figure standing beside him. Todd's eyes wide, his hand drawn protectively to his chest. Dirk's stomach fluttered at the sight of him. "Todd," he said, genuinely surprised. "Sorry," Todd said, as though he was somehow responsible for Dirk's current state. Dirk shook his head. "It's all right, I..." He'd what? Fallen asleep? Dirk glanced around the room, but aside from him and Todd, there was no one else. He remembered his sessions with Riggins, remembered guessing the contents of the envelope 4 times before Riggins was satisfied. After, Riggins had clapped him on the shoulder and permitted him solitary access to the room. Dirk had retreated to the couch. He had no recollection of having fallen asleep, but a quick glance to the television showed a black screen rolling with credits. "You're here for your appointment," Dirk said, comprehension dawning. Todd, who was wearing a somewhat bemused expression, shot Dirk a quizzical glance, as though he wasn't quite sure what to make of having found Dirk sprawled face down on the couch. Struggling against the first stirrings of embarrassment, Dirk hauled himself up into a seated position. Doing so made room on the couch, but to Dirk's disappointment, Todd opted to claim the chair across from it instead. The vinyl upholstery creaked awkwardly beneath him as he sat. Todd smiled, turning apologetic. Heavy silence settled between them. It lasted just until Dirk cleared his throat. Todd, taking this as permission to speak. "So, what were you watching?" he asked, gesturing to the TV. Dirk let his gaze drift to the still-running credits, stark white writing on a blackened screen. "Oh, it's a film called The Pink Panther," Dirk said, remembering the opening shots of Rome. He couldn't quite remember how far he'd gotten into the film, but having seen it before, it hardly mattered. "It's about this detective who..." "I know it," Todd said, interrupting his train of thought. Dirk cocked his head to the side, open question reflected in his gaze. "This is the old one, right? From the 1960s? Todd asked. Dirk nodded. "My aunt used to love that movie. Anytime my sister and I went to see her, she put it on. I've seen it like 12 times. Dirk smiled, wide and genuine, not bothering to hide his excitement. Finally, they were getting somewhere. "You have a sister?" he heard himself ask. "Yeah," Todd said, sounding startled, as if only just realizing he'd shared that detail. A fond smile spread across his face. "Younger," he explained. "She's still in high school." He shifted back as he spoke, the chair creaking a second time. This time, Todd ignored it. He turned his body so that they were practically sitting face to face, though he was no longer smiling. "I don't really see her that much. She still lives at home, and when she's not in school, she has gigs, so..." "Gigs?" Dirk asked. "Yeah, she's in a band. Plays drums," Todd told him. "She's good. Very punk." Somehow that didn't surprise Dirk, Todd seeming like the type to have come from a musical family. Still, the coincidence wasn't lost on him. "So your sister's in a band, and you're in a band. Did you ever play together?" he asked. At the mention of Todd's band, Todd's expression darkened, though he didn't explain, and Dirk opted not to ask. "We used to jam back when I was still living at home, but..." he offered a shrug. "We don't really play the same kind of music, so..." Dirk had a hunch there was something Todd wasn't telling him, but as most hunches went, he couldn't tell what it was. Was it even his place to ask? Friends told each other everything, but despite having bonded over a shared movie experience, Dirk wasn't sure they yet qualified as friends. "You should bring your guitar sometime," he offered, mostly to displace the tension. It was apparently exactly the right thing to say, because Todd's expression lightened up, faint red staining his cheeks, a smile crinkling his eyes. "You really want to hear me play?" he asked. Dirk did. So Dirk nodded. Dirk did, so he nodded somewhat enthusiastically. Todd ducked his head, his smile growing shy. "I guess I could ask," he said, though he still seemed utterly flummoxed by the idea. Flummoxed and flattered, Dirk thought. Dirk was pleased with himself for the reaction. He would have given anything to prolong the experience. But all too soon, Todd's smile vanished, new tension filling the space between them. Dirk cast vainly for something to say, his gaze drifting back to the now dark television set. "So is this what you do all day? Watch movies? Sleep on the couch?" Todd asked, Dirk somewhat startled by the question. A long, awkward second passed before Dirk realized Todd was teasing him. It showed in the slight curl of his lips, the mischievous glint in his eyes. For a moment, all Dirk could do was stare, caught in the twinkling of Todd's gaze, his eyes impossibly blue. "Oh," Dirk thought, and then more forcefully, "Oh." He wasn't sure he'd ever been teased, not like this, not with well-intentioned affection and warmth. The experience of it caught in his chest, a wild fluttering that beat against his breast. It eventually settled in the pit of his stomach. Dirk, unable to suppress his smile, "I told you it wasn't all bad," he said, recalling their previous conversation. Todd's eyes grew slightly wider, but they didn't lose their intensity. Dirk felt utterly pinned by his stare. He offered what he hoped was a dismissive shrug, Todd's smile widening, his chest shaking with silent laughter. This, Dirk thought, was progress. "So are you going to tell me how you managed that clue thing the other day?" Todd asked, the question hanging awkwardly in the air between them. Not that it was Todd's fault, the question perfectly reasonable given the circumstances. It wasn't even a surprise. Todd's wonder, before they'd come to retrieve him, anyway, openly on display. The question, then, was inevitable. The problem was how to answer. "Lucky guess?" he tried, though it was obvious Todd didn't believe him. There was no accusation in his gaze, only expectation, as though he knew damned well Dirk was deflecting. "You mean three lucky guesses," Todd said, sounding amused. Dirk tried not to panic. "Yes, three guesses. They were just guesses. I'm not psychic or anything," Dirk said, the words coming out faster than he could filter them. Across the sitting area, Todd blinked. "Who said anything about you being psychic?" he asked. Dirk hesitated. Frantically, he retraced what had been said. "You did, didn't you?" He could have sworn, the accusation still hovering between them. Todd's gaze grew so narrow, his nose wrinkled. "Did I?" he asked. Dirk wanted more than anything to laugh it off, to play it as a joke because the conversation, he suspected, had begun as such. But the words wouldn't come. They caught in his throat, Dirk swallowing against them. He'd never been very good at concealing his emotions. So it was hardly a surprise when Todd's expression fell, his earlier amusement replaced by alarm. "Shit, sorry. I didn't mean..." Dirk's stomach dropped out beneath him. "Is that why you're here?" Todd asked. He leaned forward in his chair as he spoke, the words coming out in a near whisper. Dirk glanced over his shoulder, half expecting an army of technicians to storm the room. He blinked at the firmly shut door for a long minute before letting his gaze drift back to Todd. Another minute passed before he felt capable of speaking. "I'm not psychic," he said. "I just get these hunches sometimes. I don't know how they work and I can't control them, so I have no idea how I knew which cards were in the envelopes. I just did." It was the closest he'd ever come to admitting Riggins was right. It was also the first time he'd openly acknowledged the thing that made him different. And now it was going to cost him Todd. Dirk bracing himself against the taunts of his childhood. "See you that," ringing in his ears. Except, in place of expected taunting, there was only silence. Dirk opened his eyes. He didn't remember closing them, to find Todd still perched on the edge of his chair, his eyes bright with intrigue. "But that is why you're here," Todd clarified, sounding far too excited. Dirk's stomach twisted itself into knots. No, wait, I have an idea," Todd said. He shifted a little in his seat, his hand reaching into his pocket. It emerged a second later, a single quarter caught between his middle and index finger. Dirk swallowed against a newly formed lump in his throat. "I don't think," he tried, but Todd waved off his concern. "No, this will be fun." "Heads or tails?" he asked, setting the coin on the back of his thumb. Dirk shook his head. "I really don't think this is a good... Come on, it'll be..." Todd glanced up, his words falling away the second he caught sight of Dirk's expression. Dirk had no idea what his face was doing, but he suspected it revealed far more than he wanted it to. "It's fine," he tried, but Todd was already shaking his head, the coin disappearing into his back pocket, Shit, sorry, I... He ducked his head as he spoke, as though thoroughly ashamed of his actions. A flicker of guilt crossed his features, the expression strangely suited to the lines of his face. It's fine, Dirk repeated, this time catching Todd's eye. It's just, it doesn't work like that, and no one ever believes me when I tell them that, so... He let the statement hang in the air between them, Todd growing contemplative, as though not entirely sure how to respond. Dirk waited. That must be hard, Todd eventually said. Dirk considered. There were a dozen or so ways to answer that, because on the one hand, all he'd ever wanted was for someone to believe him, for Blackwing to accept that he wasn't what they were looking for and let him go. But on the other, this was all he'd ever known. Existence outside Blackwing, so foreign a concept, Dirk wasn't sure he'd survive it. It's not all bad, he said, aiming for levity. I do get to spend my days watching TV and sleeping on the couch, so... The comment earned him a laugh, though he could tell he'd set something in motion. Todd's expression oddly introspective. Dirk wanted to ask to make sure they were still okay, because today had felt like progress, and Dirk didn't want to lose that. He didn't get the chance, though. The door on the far side of the room swinging open, a technician appearing on the other side. If Dirk's disclosure had breached Blackwing's limits, neither Riggins nor Dr. Fenchurch thought to mention it. In the days that followed, Dirk dreaded seeing either of them, terrified they'd tell him Todd wasn't coming back, that their experiment had failed, that Dirk was doomed to spend his life alone, Blackwing his eternal prison. Days passed without mention of it from either of them. Some of their leniency, he suspected, was due to his performance with the Cluedo envelope. Dr. Fenchurch designing similar experiments, Riggins beaming like the proud parent he wasn't every time Dirk got something right. It earned him a new set of batteries. Dirk coming back one day to find them sitting on his desk, package unopened. It laid the groundwork for cautious optimism. Dirk oddly hopeful in the days that followed. Naturally, he woke the next morning with a tightness in his chest, all of his senses telling him something was wrong. Which was rather alarming, given that he was secure in his bed, Blackwing undoubtedly the safest place in the universe, Dirk's psychological well-being notwithstanding. There were no alarms, which meant this wasn't a lockdown. Dirk opened his eyes, just to be sure, but in place of flashing red, there was only unnatural brightness. Dirk blinked until the ceiling came slowly into focus. The certainty that something was wrong was beginning to manifest as anxiety. Dirk's stomach rolled with it. He pushed himself up into a seated position and froze. The door to his room stood open. The door to his room, which was always, always closed, not to mention locked, stood open. He half expected someone to appear on the other side, but the hall remained empty, Dirk frozen beneath his covers, his heart beating frantically in his chest. "Hello?" he tried calling, but no one answered. Dirk racked his brain for what to do next. Investigating seemed a reasonable course of action, though it took two tries to force himself from the bed. Even then, he moved slowly across the room, approaching the open door with heightened caution. It struck him, then, that perhaps this was another of Blackwing's experiments, designed to see what Dirk would do. The sinking sensation in his gut said otherwise, and yet it was still a shock to peer out into the hall and find it empty. "Hello?" he tried again, curiosity overriding his fear. No one answered. He was struck with the sudden urge to leave the room, as though remaining was the more dangerous option. Teetering on the threshold, Dirk weighed his options. At the very least, he thought, he could hunt down a technician, tell someone about his door. Stepping out into the hall was both the most exciting thing he'd ever done, and the most terrifying. His heart continued to race, a frantic drumming that sounded suspiciously like the thundering of rabbits, warning one another of impending danger. He felt a little like a rabbit then, skittish and uncertain, ready to bolt at the first sign of trouble. The hall before him stretched on indefinitely, though Dirk knew if he followed it far enough, he'd reach the common room. Instinct had sent him in that direction, though he was far more interested in the other doors he passed. These shut tight, locked against whatever had unbolted his. Dirk's uncertainty grew. He wished he could define it, that he could isolate the sensation and say for certain what it meant. It was a hunch, he knew that much, but unlike the envelope experiment, this was vague and ill-defined. Dirk operating entirely on instinct. Instinct was telling him to run. It wanted him back in his room, he realized, the desire to return almost as overwhelming as the desire to leave. But that didn't make any sense. Why would instinct send him out of his room, only to have him return? His answer came a second later. The sound was unmistakable. The heavy tread of boots, and a single pair of clacking heels, echoing from the corridor ahead. It shouldn't have surprised him. There were still cameras, both inside his room, and spaced evenly along the hall. Of course they'd seen him leave. Of course they knew about his door. Which meant this was an experiment. One, Dirk suspected, he'd probably lost. Would it be better, he wondered, if he returned? If when they arrived, they found him already back in his room? He doubted it mattered. So instead of turning around, Dirk waited where he was, his hands pressed against his side, his gaze locked on the ground. He glanced up only when the others arrived, Dirk finding himself face to face with six of Riggan's soldiers, Dr. Fenchurch at their lead. She sagged with what Dirk could only assume was relief when she spotted him. Dirk offered her a sheepish grin. I just woke up and it was open, and I didn't... It's okay, Icarus, Dr. Fenchurch said, speaking slowly, as though afraid he might bolt. Come on, back to your room, she told him, more gentle than he could ever remember being. Her touch was gentle, too, this settling on Dirk's elbow. Slowly she led him back to his room, though Dirk couldn't help but notice that the soldiers had gone ahead, scanning the hall as though worried about what they might find. Dr. Fenchurch was worried, too, Dirk realized. A quick glance in her direction showed tight lines etched into her face, these accentuated by the dark circles under her eyes. Her hair was loose, the first time Dirk had ever seen it as such. Dark waves fell over her shoulders, her complexion startlingly pale by contrast. Given the state of her clothes, Dirk suspected she'd been summoned abruptly. Not an experiment, then. He wanted to ask, but by the time he found the words, they reached his room. Dr. Fenchurch ushered him unceremoniously inside, her expression pinched as she closed and secured the door. Dirk stood on the other side, staring out the tiny rectangular window. He watched Dr. Fenchurch bark several orders, half the soldiers moving in one direction, the other half heading back the way they'd come. Dr. Fenchurch followed the second group. The moment she was out of sight, the lights dimmed, replaced by pulsing red. A second later, the lockdown alarm sounded. Dirk stood, paralyzed by the sound. Dr. Fenchurch stared at the file sitting open on her desk. The inside cover held a photograph, this of a girl, about 12. The camera's flash reflected in her two wide eyes. She wasn't smiling, her expression entirely blank. Even her gaze was vacant. On first glance, she merely looked bored. Closer inspection showed twin strips of tape keeping her eyelids open. Her wild, tightly curled hair framed against her pillow. Beneath the girl's photograph was a stamped black square, this marred by a single set of perpendicular lines that intersected in the square's bottom left-hand corner. Griffin. Not for the first time, Fenchurch wished the girl was conscious. There was still so much about her abilities they didn't know, but they were quickly learning. You're sure it's her? Colonel Riggins asked. He sounded skeptical, but then, he had his favorites, and she had hers. Positive, Fenchurch told him. Riggins brought his finger and thumb up to rub at his mustache. Fenchurch took his silence as permission to continue. She's experimenting right now, interfacing with the system, seeing what she can do. The breaches have been too random for anything else. It's an annoyance, but you can see how it might eventually prove dangerous. Riggins arched an eyebrow at this. Not 3 weeks ago she released Incubus from their rooms. I'm fairly certain that already qualifies her as dangerous. What if she's released, Marzana? Fenchurch conceded this point in a nod. We could try sedating her, maybe remove her to a remote location. They had options. A shame to lose someone with so obvious a talent. But unless the girl woke up, Fenchurch could see no point in allowing her to continue with the program. How were they meant to harness her talents if she wasn't aware she was using them? And Icarus? Riggins asked. Fenchurch, not at all surprised. But then, as she'd mentioned, she had her favorites and he had his. Unharmed, he seemed a bit spooked by the experience. We've told him it was a short circuit. He handled it well, though, Riggins said, sounding thoughtful. Fenchurch sighed. She hated having people in her office. They took up too much space, made the room feel impossibly small. Riggins was better than most, his outward appearance tidy enough to not distract her from clean lines, and yet his presence still grated. How many times would she be forced to endure this conversation? "He's not ready for the field," she said, knowing full well what came next. "And even if he were, we don't have the budget for around-the-clock surveillance. Besides, if we're to have any hope of bringing Brotsman on board, we need Icarus here." This Riggins knew, and yet Riggins still looked set to argue. Fenchurch shot him a look, one that made Riggins shake his head, his frustration obvious. The project was his, but she knew as well as he that without her assistance, it was doomed to failure. "I'm going to schedule a polysomnograph," Fenchurch said, forcing the conversation back to Griffin. "In the interim, I would suggest switching our more dangerous subjects to manual override. It's a pain, but..." "Of course," Riggins said dismissively, as though all of this was a foregone conclusion. Fenchurch waited, hating that he wouldn't let this go. "How is Brotsman progressing?" he asked after a moment, a clumsy feint. She wasn't sure why he bothered. They both knew the conversation would end up coming back to Icarus. It always did. "He's not," he said quite plainly. His DNA markers were conclusive, and yet, despite his claims, the hereditary illness he suffers from remains dormant. Until it manifests, your theory remains exactly that, a theory. "Have you considered the environment may be too tightly controlled for his ability to fully develop?" Riggins asked. Fenchurch grit her teeth, wishing Riggins would stop trying for clever. "Scott," she said, Riggins' mustache twitching at the use of his given name. "You're too close to this. If Icarus leaves the facility, you won't get him back." She said it as bluntly as she could, though Riggins' gaze never wavered. If anything, he seemed amused, as though she were the one blinded by overinvestment. Glancing again to the file folder on her desk, Fenchurch tried not to let her frustration show. "Schedule the polysomnograph, and put Incubus, Marzana, and Moloch on manual override. I want to see how Griffin progresses," Riggins said. Fenchurch, somewhat taken aback by the change of topic. Glancing up sharply, she nodded. "You want to see what'll happen if she gets her door open," she guessed. Riggins' expression turned thoughtful. He contemplated her carefully, as though debating how much to share. Fenchurch shot him a pointed eyebrow. "We've been doing this a long time, Martha," he said, the first time she could ever remember him addressing her as such. Her shock was paramount. She could scarcely bring herself to nod. "Your point?" she asked. "My point is Icarus has progressed more these past 3 weeks than he has in years. We can't keep them locked up forever. At some point they need to leave the nest." "You think we're stifling them," she realized. "You want to see what they can do in the absence of controls." "I think," Riggins said, sounding quite serious, "this isn't something we can contain. I think in trying to, we've already doomed ourselves to failure." He stood as he spoke, as though perhaps, hoping in doing so, he might get in the last word. Fenchurch waited for him to reach the door before responding. "Have you run this by General Kinsey?" she asked. The sudden stiffening of Riggins' shoulders suggested he hadn't. Fenchurch smiled at his lack of response.